I'm Rick Moore, and this is Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore, brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, and by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore. I'm really pleased now to be joined by Reverend Julie Flowers of Beverly, who is a city councilor at large and looking to stay in that job. And Julie, welcome back to MSO.
Thank you. It's really nice to have the chance to come back and connect more with you and your audience.
Appreciate
having me.
All right, this is cool. So much to talk about, and I know you've talked with Bill many times in the past, and I'm going to touch on one or two of those topics. But first, I'd like to get maybe sort of an overview of how things are transpiring or have transpired in your most recent term as city councilor. And we'll start in particular with how you navigated COVID, how the city has navigated COVID-19 this past year.
Sure. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for that question, because I think that's one of the things, of course, all of us living through a global pandemic that we would not have necessarily, none of us probably thought we would be, has definitely made my second term very distinct from my first. And I'm guessing that a lot of my fellow counselors would say the same, you know, no matter what term they were in. I think this one has just felt extremely unique, probably the way that for residents in our community, whatever people's jobs and day-to-day lives were before COVID-19, this has been distinct from that. And so I think, you know, early on in the pandemic, March 2020, our priority as a council and working with our mayor's office and our Department of Health and our schools, of course, was to try to just continue to be learning as much as we could about what was unfolding. You know, if you think back to that time in March 2020, there was so much we didn't know. And of course, there's still things that we're learning about the COVID virus itself. But at the beginning, you know, we really weren't sure, any of us, you know, how it was transmitted exactly, if it could be on surfaces, if it could be on our mail. You know, I think back to those moments and trying to triage together with fellow local leaders, elected and otherwise, you know, especially our Department of Health is very instrumental in this, you know, mobilizing our, not only our public health nurse, Teresa Kirsch, who's done an amazing job throughout this time, but that they, our Department of Health then ended up mobilizing our school nurses once schools were not open to really help in the effort of contact tracing and helping to try to keep our community safe. And that just was a monumental effort at the outset that has continued. But I think as a community and as leaders elected and otherwise, we've really been able to grow and evolve in our own understanding along with residents and neighbors and all of us as a whole in how we can sort of tweak some of those early measures, you know, when things had to be fully shut down, and try to really lean back into how can we as a community live in ways that help our local businesses to stay open? How can we live in ways that can help our schools to be open so that our children can be with their peers, can be in front of their teachers, can really have their social, emotional health and well-being attended to in ways that, you know, our educators did an incredible job trying to triage needs and do that work and be there for students all throughout the time that schools were remote. And I think we really have to commend them. I also know that educators in our community were eager to have students back in front of them because they really wanted to be able to check in with their students, look them in their eyes, you know, face to face. And I think we've been able to move in that direction as a community, and think about how we can then take some measures, that will help keep our community as healthy and safe as possible while also supporting our shared efforts, you know, to want to be together and to want to be able to be together in some of those really critical places. Like our schools, like our public buildings. And I do think, I know I just touched on it as I was sort of going through, but, and helping to keep our local businesses open. I think when we think about our, you know, the heart of our community and Beverly and its downtown and then throughout its different neighborhoods, we have so many incredible local businesses here that make Beverly so special and also are owned and staffed by people who are our friends and our neighbors. And so that's a big piece of where I think our focus is now, is how do we continue to live in a way that keeps us all as healthy and safe as possible as COVID is still evolving and changing. And what can we do as a community together to ensure that we're uplifting, particularly those important access points, our local businesses, our schools, our public buildings, access to our library, access to public services for people who really are counting on them.
So many people have had priorities changed in the last year, and I'm sure it's the same way with city councils across the state and select boards and so on. What are some of the things, Julie, if you would, that are sort of normal city council happenings? In other words, your city council at large, councilor at large, what are some of the things that people have approached you about in this last year that are sort of normal that you have been able to focus on, albeit remotely, at city council meetings?
Yeah, so you're right. A lot of priorities did shift, especially initially, but the routine work of also providing services and trying to be there for constituents and residents, that also has absolutely continued. And so I think some of those kind of routine matters include things like, just as an example, there are, of course, many streets in Beverly that we're always being looked at and trying to figure out how we can prioritize for paving. There are a couple of streets that are over by the Prospect Hill neighborhood. They're relatively small, shorter streets, Jackson and Hancock Street, that have been on our internal, the city's grading system for how we try to rate the streets, or how our Department of Public Works will rate the streets and then try to help prioritize which streets are sort of most in need of paving and how we can fit those together into the budget. Jackson and Hancock Street have been clearly, rated low on that scale, meaning they really did need attention. And so that's an area where, just as an example, I've been working with neighbors, hearing from neighbors in that area, as I know has the mayor and Ward 2 Councilor Estelle Rand, that those are Ward 2 streets, and really trying to work with those neighbors, bring their concerns, to be a conduit. Part of my role is to be a conduit, I think, to be a voice for residents and neighbors, and bring their concerns to the council chamber, bring those concerns to meetings with our Department of Public Works commissioner, with our mayor. And so during this time, I'm really happy to say Jackson Hancock Street made the paving list for the coming paving season. And so that might sound like sort of a mundane thing, but I think that's what you're asking.
Yeah, absolutely.
What are the routine services that we continue to try to listen to people and meet their needs? Another one that is an ongoing project that was sort of slowed down by the pandemic, but it's happening now. I'm sure people are noticing it when they're driving around the city because it does feel like a big lift at the moment. It's the three intersection project. So there is work that's going on at intersections that were determined by the state to be some of the lowest graded. And in that case, it means, least safe, least flowing well intersections in our community. And so those are the intersection down by the Veterans Memorial Bridge that goes into Salem, where Cabot and Rantoul kind of converge together. The intersection by Henry's Market, I'm sure people have noticed that one. That's kind of a central hub intersection. And the intersection by the Beverly Golf and Tennis Court, where McKay Street meets New Balch Street. So those three intersections are all getting some attention now. They are along state roads, so there's state money and state project work that's happening, but of course it is impacting Beverly neighbors every day. And so we're feeling the effect right now, and I know it's creating more traffic for people. At the end of this, I think what we'll see is safer intersections that flow better and work better for our community. And so I think that's another example of something that was sort of, it was already on the table in front of us before the pandemic. It did get slightly pushed back in terms of schedule because of the pandemic, but it's happening now. And I know there's a big push being put on projects, at least more buttoned up before our children are back in school starting September 1st. So people who are patiently enduring the traffic changes won't see some of them fully complete, but I do think a lot of sidewalk work, those kind of improvements, there's a real push to get that done before our children are back walking to school, biking to school, that sort of thing.
Well, forgive me for saying this, but ever since I moved to Massachusetts, I think that some of the intersections and rotaries were designed by engineers from hell because they're very, very difficult to navigate. And you mentioned three, certainly, that have always required attention in Beverly, which leads me to a question. I was listening to the very first interview you did with Bill Newell, and he asked you about crossing over the street between your your role as a clergy member and your role as a member of the city council. How has that worked for you now, Julie, over the last 4 years? Because you do have a commitment to just about all kinds of needs in people.
Yeah, you know, I think I'm struck over and over again, and I think I do recall talking with Bill about that, and at the time talking about how I thought there were a lot of crossover skill sets, even that the roles really crossed over in some unique ways, and I continue to think that, and the place that I see the most sort of congruence is that both my professional day job role at the church and my city council role, I think, are primarily about people. And so, you know, I see over and over that it's, as you said, it's really thinking about people and who they are in our community and what their needs are and hearing their stories. So that's where I just frequently am struck by sort of the crossover, that a big part of both roles is meeting people where they are, inviting them to tell their story, you know, whether it's the story might be about a need in terms of their street or a need in terms of, you know, talking with us about waste removal, trash removal, or a need in terms of increased rat populations that they've seen on their property. Those are some of the things that we're talking about right now in Beverly with a lot of residents and talking about on the council. So whether it's those kind of stories or, you know, it's neighbors who are coming and asking for housing assistance or food assistance, talking about struggles that have happened to them because of the pandemic, their financial situation has changed. Or they're a local business owner, and how can we help to support them as we're moving through the pandemic and out of it? I think really the core of that is it's about listening first, and I really try to prioritize that, being accessible and listening first, and then determining how to best meet the need. And, you know, I think, but depending on if it's a church priority or a city priority, how I might go about being working to meet the need may be different, whether, you know, I'm going through avenues for my day job or working with the municipal government as a city councilor. I think there are sometimes differences where I might point people or how I might walk the journey with them. But I think that at the core of it, it's about people and what they need and how I can try to best use myself mm-hmm. and the resources at my disposal and to be able to walk through that with them and either connect them to the right people or help advocate for them or find ways to help them from sort of my bag of resources, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. And I enjoyed listening to your prediction, and how it has come to fruition. You know, these 4 years later, you know, the face of downtown Beverly has changed so much in the last 4, 5, 6 years or so. Vastly improved Rantoul Street, Cabot Street, and so on. And you know, you also have talked about that with Bill over your campaign the last two times in running for city council. I wonder if at this point you could maybe mention one or two accomplishments. In other words, something that you thought you might be able to do, and you've been able to do that in your first two terms, and then maybe, you know, we'll take a look ahead and what are some of the other things that you continue to work on and want to do.
Sure. So one of the things that I think when I first ran, that was we were all talking about, city councils were talking about it, the school committee was talking about it, and I certainly am not going to say that I alone am the reason that this happened, but it was a big priority for me to be part of this conversation. So that was moving Beverly to a place where we could have free kindergarten for all of our students. If you think back to when I first ran, Beverly was one of the few communities in Massachusetts that still had a fee for full-day kindergarten. We did have a half-day kindergarten program at that time that was free, but for students that were going full-day, there was a fee. And, of course, it was on a sliding scale. There was assistance. There were ways that we were working to try to mitigate that or increase access for students. But a big part of the conversation then across both, both elected bodies of our government was about how to move together in a place where we could make it possible in our budget to not charge a kindergarten fee. And as I said, I would not say as a city councilor that I'm the sole reason that that happened. Our school committee, absolutely, it was their work, their prioritization, their vote that made it happen ultimately. But I do think a place where I feel like I could be helpful and feel really proud that we as a community together were able to make this shift was really being an advocate on the city council side to support the schools in that endeavor, to talk about what I, you know, felt that it meant for our community to be a place where we could send the message that all of our children, it is a priority to make sure all of our children have access to full day kindergarten without a fee, without obstacles, without barriers.
Mm-hmm.
And then to be able to ultimately be part of working on and toward and approving a budget that made space for that to be possible. So that's a big shift that's happened, you know, from when I first was running to where we are now. And again, I just really cannot commend my school committee colleagues enough for their steadfast determination to work toward that goal. I think that's something that we can feel really good about. I also do think that, you know, when I first started, the Cabot Street project was something that was just being talked about. We were, you know, working toward getting the funding for that, hoping that the state would work with us on some smart streets initiatives, which essentially means making streets safer for not only cars, but pedestrians and people on bikes. I think that's really key to, you know, I think back to how Cabot Street felt before we began the work, and it certainly felt that crossing Cabot Street just felt a lot more tenuous at times. You know, people were driving more quickly at the time. That was definitely a concern. Some of the redesign to the street has been to help change the streetscape, but also to increase safety. I think having a walkable downtown community, a bikeable downtown community, that is really important and will continue to be really important to all of us. So, you know, Cabot Street is not done, and we'd love to keep going and doing the work further down, you know, get past what's Bruin, Tartine, and keep going towards the bridge. At this point, we're not actively pursuing that as quickly as we might, because some of the businesses, you know, part of our priority once COVID came too as a city, and I know this was the mayor's priority, was to try to do the work now with it, minimal disruption to the businesses, because they were already being so disrupted by the pandemic. So, of course, doing the work on the sidewalks and the street right in front of their businesses is disruptive too. And so I think we're trying to move forward with that project and bring it to completion in a way that's also very sensitive to the needs of our businesses. So how to get that work done without, you know, disrupting them right at a time when maybe they're hitting their stride again.
People run for elected office for various reasons, Julie, and having met you for the first time, it sounds like you really love doing what you're doing.
Yeah, I really do, and I think I kind of keep learning more as I go, of course, and I keep learning more about the people, and I think that's the best part. You know, I mentioned to you before that I think people and meeting people and hearing their stories, that's the central piece, and then figuring out how I can be the best advocate or representative, you know, for them or of their voice possible. And that to me is the best part. It's meeting the people and getting to know them. And so I continue to really love it because, you know, the more I get to do it, the more I get to meet new people and hear their stories.
You know, I have the same feeling doing this job. It's very similar. And also, I think as a final note, I'm very excited to see that the Beverly Christmas Parade is back.
It is. It's coming back. So I'm excited about that, too. That's always such a fun community event.
Okay. Julie, as you run for re-election, any final thoughts or comments that you want to mention?
You know, I would just say that one of the things that people will definitely be hearing more about and seeing then kind of come into play in our community in the coming weeks, but certainly actually over the coming years, is about receiving and then spending Beverly's share of the ARPA funding, which is the American Rescue Plan funds. And so we're slated to get $12.6 million. And so we'll be working together as a council, with the mayor's administration. And also I know there's some community conversations that are being planned where Beverly residents can come and talk about where they hope that some of our ARPA funding can go. But this money really is, coming to us. It is pandemic relief money, but it's also exciting to think about the ways that we can use it to really support our residents and to support some of our neighborhoods and our businesses, because there are categories, you know, that are attached to how the funding can be spent. Public health is one of those. Alleviating negative economic and health impacts, which would be like working with our community partners, businesses, and how we might support families or seniors in our community better. Infrastructure needs are one of the allowable uses for it. So I know people are beginning to have thoughts about where they might see some potential for that to go. You know, an area that I had said that I would be interested in thinking about is doing work on the McPherson Youth Center and the skate park that goes along with it, some of those areas that can really uplift some of the young people in our community. But also there are different census tracts now as the census information is coming back from the most recent census. Specific census tracts are also eligible to be places where we can do some climate resiliency projects. And so I think it will just be exciting together as a community to be thinking about where we'd like to see our ARPA funds do the most good. And so people should definitely stay tuned for the community conversations that will be happening, or they can always, of course, email their city councilors, call their city councilors. People can always email me at jflowers@beverlymass.gov. I always love to hear from people. And I guess one last fun thing I'll just say quickly is that I also had the chance recently to meet some pickleball players. There's a very active pickleball community, not only in Beverly, but all around our area. And think with them about what possibilities there might be to add some pickleball courts to some of our open space in Beverly. Some of our neighboring communities have already done that. And at this point, we don't have any dedicated pickleball courts. There are lines on the court, the tennis court at Aubert Park, where people do play. But just kind of fun to think with them about what this growing pickleball community, how it spans all ages. And they even have me out on the court. They started to teach me to play. I'd never played. So that was really fun. And that's sort of a fun project I'm excited to think about and try to work together with my fellow elected leaders to see where we could put a dedicated pickleball court or, you know, or area for people to be able to gather and play.
That is Beverly City Councilor at Large, the Reverend Julie Flowers. With MSO News Sports, I'm Rick Moore. This has been Connections, a podcast connecting you with news, newsmakers, sports, and entertainment voices all over the North Shore. Brought to you by Moynihan Lumber of Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, by the Institution for Savings, based in Newburyport, with branches throughout the region. Connect with Connections by emailing msonewsports@gmail.com.